You know the only thing I hate about watching games live?
One of the men's room?
Yeah, okay, well, two things. It's just so slow, you know? It's like you're sitting there half the time just waiting for something to happen. It's ridiculous. It's like work.
It's like life. Actually, baseball's the perfect metaphor for life.
I read something like that in a book once.
You read a book?
Well, no. It's one of those HBO documentaries. Bob Costas hosted it. He's a midget.
Is he really?
Well, close to it. He can fit two of his asses in these seats.
Anyway, baseball and life, one and the same. I mean, everybody says that life is too short. Bullshit. Life, unless you get cancer or hit by a bus or set on fire, it takes forever. Just like baseball. It's a series of long, mind-bogglingly boring stretches of time where absolutely nothing happens. So, you take a nap. And then, after a little while, when that crisp crack of the bat hitting the ball, so crisp you can almost smell that wood burning, jolts you awake and you open your eyes to see something so exciting and intricate and possibly very, very meaningful has just happened, but you missed it because you were just so goddamn bored in the first place. Oh, you know, a couple of hot dogs, throw in some beers, the occasional blowjob, and that's that.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to Camp Reeducation, an immersive boot camp into the world we thought we knew. We are your hosts, Ian and Shay, beginning our 2-week immersion into the world of baseball.
Well, hello, Ian, and everyone else. How are you all doing? I'll start with you, Ian.
that's awful nice of you. I'm gonna get called ableist now. You just can't make fun of any disabilities anymore.
Is that even what you were doing? I feel like that was a legitimate stutter.
A legitimate stutter. No, like I haven't overcame a stutter. I was a stutterer.
Wait, is this true?
I don't know. Sure.
okay.
Yeah, so we're doing things a little bit differently. We started off, instead of a cold open by us, we had a cold open from a show that I actually loved growing up. So that is the Baseball Monologue. You can YouTube that just as is. Baseball Monologue from the show Rescue Me, which is fucking amazing. I think the first couple seasons were like just really fucking good. Great storytelling, great writing. And it's nice because it wasn't a copaganda. It was a bunch of firemen and they were like, "We hate the police. We put out fires."
That's so funny. You know, I've never seen the show, and I've only ever seen this monologue now that you showed it to me. My first thought was like, man, this acting sucks.
Speaking of fire, you know what else is red hot? Today's featured artist, James Beau Barclay, with his song, "You Make Life Easy." You gotta stick around to the end of the episode to hear it in its entirety, but here's a little taste now. Ooh, the only thing hotter than fire is this shit. Anyway, back to the episode, you sexy bitches. Really? You know what's so funny is like I remember, it's just so funny how fucking memory works, and I'm glad this is actually a perfect segue because we're going to talk a lot about this, right? This nostalgia effect and this idea of like the memory always being sweeter than like the actual thing itself, like because I rewatched it as well and was like, I remember this being better.
Yeah. Well, the monologue stands on its own, and I guess like the metaphor they're making is powerful, but do you think it's accurate?
So it's funny, we reached out to a couple friends as well about this, you know, why do you like baseball? What is it about baseball that like we're missing or not seeing? And I feel like in every documentary I watched, every article I read where baseball is romanticized, the crack of the bat, everybody fucking loves, they get so horny for the crack of the bat metaphor. Lick it. Now lick it, Shay. I didn't know you were actually going to do that.
For those at home, I have an amazingly beautiful Chinese steel baseball bat right here. And just for some added effect, I'm also wearing a New York Yankees jersey and a Boston Red Sox cap. Do you know that I had a Boston Red Sox cap on, Ian? Did you even know that?
Well, it's so far back on your fucking head, like I can't even see the logo.
Well,
like,
this is the logo for the Boston Red Caps.
That's just a picture of a rooster.
Yeah, but what does it say?
It says cock.
There we go.
My favorite baseball mascot, the cock.
The cock.
Hey, wake up, Johnny. Here comes the big cock. So, all right, I know that was a nice sidetrack, but yeah, I don't know. For me, it's interesting because I feel like baseball is just kind of the philosopher's stone for a lot of people. Like, it's whatever they want it to be, and you kind of can't argue with it. Everybody turns it into their own, like, little poem. It's all their own love song. What about you?
Do I think it's well, you
does
know,
the metaphor, does the metaphor stand for you?
Yeah, well, some parts of the metaphor for sure. Like, it's definitely long. It's definitely boring. You know what? I guess, yes.
Those aren't metaphors.
Yeah.
Those are just the actual descriptors of baseball.
I guess the metaphor would be that life is long and boring and not a lot happens and then eventually you die. Yeah, you know what? Actually, I do think it's a good metaphor, which is like, why would I want to do something that is just a smaller version of like the agony of just being alive in the first place?
Can you imagine that? Like, step right up, get your tickets here. We got a metaphor for life. Metaphors for life here.
Yeah, it's somehow, though, they managed to sell it. And so many people took the bait, and now we are where we are now in the world of fantasy baseball, which is fucking bizarre. So that's, I guess that brings us very nicely into how we spent our first week. We've dived. How do I still not know the past tense for this?
Okay, it's the past perfect. So it's dive, dove, dived. We have dived.
So
it doesn't sound right though, right?
We have dived. But dove is the simple past.
Dove is the simple past. But I mean,
We dove into it.
So stupid about English. Like, sometimes when you're being grammatically correct, it sounds fucking stupid. When you say an historical, like, fuck off. It should be a historical. That sounds bad. It was an historical moment. You sound like a dick.
Those are just the Brits who do that. They're just, because they just decided that the H is not going to be pronounced anymore in all of their But you would say,
historical.
You would say an hors d'oeuvre.
Give me a horse d'oeuvre.
Give me a horse. A horse.
Give me a
d'oeuvre. I want a horse d'oeuvre. One horse d'oeuvre.
Hey, give me a horse a d'oeuvre.
So, yeah, we've been doing fantasy baseball. It's been tight. I guess in this first week, we did our draft. We got six of our most gullible friends to join in a real life MLB fantasy baseball draft, and that was actually pretty fun. I know we're gonna talk about that a little bit more. I tried to go to a baseball game. I think I didn't. I know I didn't, and that's because we weren't COVID vaxxed, which, you know, I'm kind of glad they had these regulations, but for some reason I was like, oh, baseball people are so conservative, they don't give a fuck about vaccines, they'll let anyone in. But fortunately, to my surprise, I wasn't allowed to go to a baseball match. So,
fortunately, you mean unfortunately, or do you mean fortunately? Like, oh, thank God, now I don't have to go to a baseball.
Well,
game.
Fortunately for like the world of COVID people, which I think is just the world.
Yeah. Well, I mean, hey, you're a better man than me. I didn't even bother looking. I was like, I'm not going to a baseball game. I can honestly, I don't know. Do you think that's probably part of the immersion? Like sitting in the stands, paying like $12 for a fucking beer, $50 for five peanuts. I imagine it. I think you could easily spend over $100 at a baseball game and walk out feeling like you made a huge mistake.
Yeah, I mean, I feel like I probably would leave with those feelings. But Ian, let me just pop quiz, since I just recently looked this up. How much do you think it costs to get nosebleed baseball seats in New York?
My guess is $20.
That's pretty spot on. We found some for $15. But that was pre all of these weird fees they put. I'm not sure if they're like COVID fees or like what the deal is. But yeah, $15. I was like, actually, like, that's not terrible. That's as much as you pay for like movie tickets basically these days. And, you know,
cheaper than movie tickets these days.
Yeah. So for like an immersive experience, I'm like, actually, that's not terrible. I mean, like, I'm not going to learn anything about the human condition through this experience like I might in a movie. But hey, you know, at least it's something to do. It's literally, and we'll talk about this later, it's a pastime. Like, it's going to pass. The time will pass.
And eventually you will pass too. You know, you know, it's really funny. And I don't know if this is baseball's intention, but dissident Nobel poet Joseph Brodsky said in a, what's that thing where you talk to the students, a commencement speech?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. He said at a commencement speech, the school's not important. He said that it was your duty in life to let boredom crush you. He said it was like the ultimate equalizer, something that you shouldn't keep trying to escape, because the attempted escape of boredom is life avoidant in a sense. Like if your goal is to avoid being bored, like your occupying force is just constant stimulation, in which case you'll appreciate nothing. So maybe he was a baseball fan.
That's fascinating and like kind of dark. I mean, I love it. Like in this really masochistic sense, like I'm just like, fuck yeah. Like I'll be bored. Being crushed at all in life feels great.
It also feels very Russian. And I think it's worth noting that when he published some of his poems, he was actually sentenced in a Soviet prison or something, like for perversion. I guess he had a sex poem and they were like, hey, there's no sex in poetry in Russia. So he was sentenced to shovel shit. Huh. I guess like or in the White Sea or something like that. Or maybe he just was sentenced to like shovel. You know, their punishments were poetic. So I think his job was to shovel snow into the White Sea. And it's just like, you know, that's was his punishment.
Wow, that is a weird fucking punishment. Well, cool. Anyway, back to America. So why should you care about baseball camp? Why should we care? I think this segment is more for us than anyone else, because I've had a very hard time giving this topic like the real energy or intensity that we put into our other immersions, because like I just really struggle to care about baseball. And I imagine like to our listeners, like you're probably sitting there thinking like, do I really want to listen to a camp on baseball? Like, doesn't baseball just fucking suck? It's like, well, maybe. So we're here to find out for you. And so we've come up with a list of reasons why maybe you should care about baseball. And as we mentioned a second ago, it is often touted as America's pastime. And Ian, you had some interesting questions on this one.
Yeah, so I mean, I guess after doing some research, there's this idea too of like just how American is baseball, okay? Like if you basically copy another sport and change one or two rules, like did you really invent anything or did you tweak it? Just like, you know, other countries have meters and we have feet. We didn't invent measurement, but you know, we were like, oh yeah, you know, we invent, hey, this is our system, it's great.
I want to counter that. Can I counter? Let me argue. I want to argue.
You know what? It's probably more interesting than talking about baseball. Lay it on me. We're just here to have fun, folks.
So even with your analogy there, okay. I'd be like, yeah, we didn't invent this other way of measuring, or we didn't invent measurement. We just did this other thing. Well, I don't think anyone's arguing that we invented sports. We just invented a different version of like an existing sport. You know, I think you could just say like, yeah, it's baseball. Like it's ours. Like it was invented in America the same way jazz was invented. Like we didn't invent music, doesn't mean we didn't invent jazz, you know?
Okay, I'm trying to think about what genre is jazz closest to?
I guess blues, and then from blues it's like Americana and folk music.
I don't know. I like the idea that I like the idea of being a businessman and I'm pitching jazz to like a corporation and I'm like, picture this. It's Beethoven, but he's black.
Oh my god. Yeah, that's probably how it went down. I'm pretty sure I saw that in a documentary or it was an NPR spot. That's what it was.
I think so. Yeah. They're fucking that standard that piano you're hearing isn't a white person.
Oh god.
I don't know why. That's just how they do it. They like there's always like a sound effect or something and they're like, "That's not what you think it is."
Yes.
That's not someone breathing in helium from a balloon. That's a mime getting his sucked.
Oh my god. What? You know, I know the joke you're making because we talked about this beforehand, but like I'm not sure the listeners followed us on this journey. Maybe I'm wrong. And if tweet me. Tweet me right now at what Shay said on Twitter.
I thought this was that I don't know. I know we did it. I don't know where we did it. I don't know that it was on a thing that we did, but
I'm pretty sure we had that off the air talking to our friend Amy, who was helping us with some creative work. It was not.
Oh no! I thought this was a continuation of a camp re-education gag. No, I just pulled this out of nowhere.
Yeah.
Oh fuck! Anyway, in a private meeting, I had this great NPR bit. You can't. It's not on our Patreon. So anyway, moving on. Okay, so
why else should you care? Why else should you care? So MLB players,
I had a point.
You were gonna talk. I mean, I already started. I mean, do you want?
Go ahead. Just
okay, cool. I just don't want to have to retrace my steps. So MLB players, as you are probably well aware, are stupid rich. They make, on average, about $4 million, I guess, a year. But that number has decreased now for 3 straight years. And so I'm asking now, is baseball dying? Is this a harbinger of the death of America's pastime? Or is this just a question that comes up every time there's some kind of a shift in the viewership of baseball? And I think, as we learned, like, this question itself, like, is this the end of baseball, has happened like numerous times. Like, baseball has had like this crazy reckoning with its own existence. Like, they're like, oh, this is the end. Like, there's no way baseball will survive this. And then it just, like, fucking...
And it keeps surviving.
Yeah, like zombie Jesus. It just keeps coming back in different forms.
Yeah, so it's... When you asked this question, like, it's funny because, like, as I jokingly asked, I was like, well, has any sport died? Like, why or why not? Is there anything we can do to kind of help hurry kill baseball off? And then you said you apparently found a list, and you said some of these are really fucked up, so I wanted to be surprised, and I wanted you to read it on the air. So let me hear them.
Well, you at first seemed surprised that any sport had died, so I was like, well, surely there have to be some. Like, for instance...
Hold on. Before you say it, really quick, caveat. If a civilization died, then that makes sense. Like, if there was an ancient Roman sport called dog ball, and they, like, cut a dog in half and threw it over a cliff, and they were like, dog ball! Ancient Rome is gone. So it's like that, I understand that sport disappearing, but, like, while the civilization was still alive... That's my caveat. Go ahead. Read me the list.
Well, there were some of there. And you aren't that far off with dog ball.
Oh, no. Dog ball is real?
Well, I don't know if dog ball is real, but there is fox tossing.
Oh, no.
With a person on each end of a sling tossed a fox upwards, the team with the highest throw would win. And then, of course, who can forget goose pulling? Which a goose was hung by its legs while a man on a horseback would attempt to grab it by the neck to try and pull its head off. A classic, right? There is cock throwing. A rooster is tied to a post, and people took turns throwing sticks at it until the rooster died. And with such great historical context to sports, there's no wonder why baseball has thrived and become what it is today as America's number one pastime.
Join me in signing my petition to bring back cockball. I think that you know what's so funny is I don't have time to come up with the mental construction to do the legwork to get from cockball to cock and ball torture.
That's what you're going for. Okay. Well, at least now I know.
Part two, I'm going to have that joke ready. So wait for me there.
We're holding you to it, Ian. So the other reason we think maybe you should care is that fantasy sports is a big thing now, and obviously, like, our camp is basically fantasy baseball. So we've been learning through baseball through the lens of fantasy baseball, which I guess is like we're trying to understand baseball through maybe the most iteration of baseball that might exist, and that's the fantasy version.
Hey, some of us are out here playing gooseball, some of us are out here playing cockball. You know how the cookie crumbles. So really quick, I know we've got I don't know how much more informed we feel after a week of doing this. I do know we have our Ignorance in a Bottle segment to get into, but I want to ask you a quick question. When we talk about, like, the criticism of baseball, you know, you and I both being like, oh God, baseball, eye roll. And even the joking question of, like, is there anything we can do to hurry help kill baseball off? I mean, like, when we do criticize the sport, like, is that our hope that baseball will go away, that we can convince enough people to stop watching it? What you watching? Baseball. You know, this is stupid. You know, I never thought of it that way. And, like, they just turn off and we start, like, a revolution of people going, hey, fuck sports.
That's interesting. So your question to me is the criticism...
What's the end game?
Yeah, of criticizing it?
Of our criticism, yeah.
I don't know. Does there have to be an end game? Like, can't you just have an opinion and just, like, that be it? Like, I think this is stupid. Like, I don't necessarily have to have an objective behind an opinion, do I?
I think it helps. I think maybe it helps. What the point of the criticism is. Like, if you're just trying to make the person feel bad, then I think that's shitty. But if it's like, if the objective is to, you know, I don't know, enlighten a person to the point that maybe they'll second guess like what they're doing, or maybe second guess the value of the thing that they're indulging in, then yeah, like, I don't know. Well, I guess for me, it's like, that was my question. Like, is my point to, I want people to stop watching it and eventually I want baseball to go away?
So I guess like the difference there is like, if you're, I guess the criticism that you have is like an outward criticism that you're like directing towards people and you're, I guess, criticizing it, then maybe, yeah, it would make sense to have like an objective and like, maybe that is your objective. But if you just have an opinion, it's like, if someone asks you, do you like baseball? And you're like, no, I think it's stupid. Then I don't necessarily know if you need like a motivation behind that. I think that is the motivation. It's just having a feeling is the end. It's not a means to an end.
Interesting. I always, sometimes when I have these questions, I always play this mental game of like, would the world be a better place if this thing did or did not exist?
And, so what do you think for baseball?
You know what's so funny is, and I know we're kind of going off on a tangent here, you know, I was thinking about baseball athletes, and I was thinking about athletes generally and just like, you know, how much calories you need to consume as an athlete to like fuel your body. So it's like at peak performance. And the point of it being at peak performance is so that you can be at peak entertainment value. And I was thinking about how we just got done with mukbang camp, and I'm like, I think mukbang is better than sports. I think mukbang uses less resources than sports does.
That's it. Well, it certainly does, but I guess it also generates a lot of money, like in a way that mukbang doesn't. I mean, like for not only the athletes, but also for like the surrounding community. I know this is like a contentious fucking thing. I know like so many cities like pay millions of dollars to build these stadiums, and then like, well, who gets like, who benefits really? Is it just the players? Is it just the team owners? Or does like the economic impact of the surrounding area actually carry over to like mom and pop shops that might be located near these stadiums?
Well, I've heard it actually costs some cities money. Like, I've heard it costs taxpayer money to even have these stadiums and these cities. And like, a lot of the owners will basically use their positions as like leverage and be like, if I don't get XYZ, right, I'm taking the team out of here.
Well, it's like the same thing fucking like Amazon did with its second headquarters or whatever, you know, like trying to get like the best fucking deal it can for itself, you know, with through tax breaks or whatever. I mean, I guess... And I guess that's where we are with baseball. It is huge fucking business. So obviously you're going to be seeing the same tactics used by corporations as you are through like an entertainment.
And it's funny too, because also like, you know, it's weird. Like, can our like, I don't know, like if baseball really is like our primary cultural export or the thing that we like lay most claim to, then like, can a, I don't know, like, can a cultural element like be a product? Like, does it lose its claim to cultural relevance if it becomes available for purchase? And like, is the only reason to keep baseball alive an economic one? You know, it's like, oh yeah, like it keeps a lot of people employed, so we have to keep baseball around.
All these questions and more to be determined at the end of Ignorance in a Bottle. So I guess, Ian, without any further ado, let's hand it over to those past versions of ourselves who know even less somehow than we do. Pass Ian and Shay, take it away.
Ignorance in a bottle. Ignorance in a bottle. In a bottle.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to Ignorance in a Bottle, an ignorance time capsule to showcase / encapsulate our ignorance before we consult the almighty ignorant, because after all, we are only this ignorant once. I did that without looking at the read-on. I have it memorized. I am better than you.
You know, baseball. You said it wrong, right? You said before consulting the almighty ignorant.
I said in, you know what? You, they know what I mean, ignorant. Okay? They know, yeah, what I mean.
Well, wipe that smug smile right off your face.
Show never.
Boasting about how well you know the script.
Never. Baseball, who is it? What does it want from us? Why is it here? And Shay, what do you know about it? Go ahead and tell me. I'm literally all ears. Both of my ears, there, I have them. Go.
Baseball, what do I know about it? Virtually nothing. This is like the one of the camps I'm very uninterested in diving into, because I've decided somewhat early on in life that I'm just not a baseball kind of guy. So, and I guess here I am like reevaluating why it is I decided that before.
You know what's fascinating to me in this is that like baseball, for some reason, is a sport that you're like baseball, football, basketball, you know, all the big ones. baseball because we're talking about it, but like I shit on baseball and you're like, yeah, fuck baseball. As soon as I start to talk shit about fucking foosball, you lose your mind. So it's funny to me, like, what you have decided to kind of like hit your wagon to is foosball of all things.
Foosball is awesome. You're just jealous because you suck at foosball.
I suck at foosball because I don't give a shit about foosball, okay? Like, even like as soon as I saw it, I was like, I don't care about this.
Yeah, you just don't know how to do it right. Anyway, baseball.
Even if I did, you know what? Even if I did know how to do it right, I wouldn't want to do it at all.
No. False. Clearly a man who's never executed a successful push shot.
You need cannot believe someone found the time to name these. Get better hobbies.
All right, so baseball. We're here to talk about baseball. I don't know anything about it. I do know that you and I both did baseball as kids, right? Was like in a, I guess it's T-ball when you're like in elementary school. I was in a T-ball league. I wasn't actually in a, were you in like a, did they throw the ball at you or was
baseball league. I was in an actual baseball league. I think we were called the Tigers. No, we were called the Tigers. And my coach was my friend's stepdad, and he drove a Firebird, and he would always put us in the back and be like, y'all kids want to have some fun? And then he would speed and swerve the car and then just like throttle us around in the back like we were baby frogs that someone had thrown in the back of a Hot Wheels.
Jesus, that is awful. That's some awful irresponsible imagery. So were you good at baseball?
Tommy and Daniel's stepdad, they were both on the team. Or were they? No, Daniel was the cool one that was into rap, and then Tommy was the dork that I played baseball with. Shout out to Tommy. they literally tried me in every single position to figure out what I would be good at, and then like we made it all the way to the championships, and I'm almost positive the only reason we won was because that weekend my family went camping, and I wasn't there to fuck up the team. And I remember Tommy's dad being like, turns out we had a pretty talented kid this whole time. And then he just lingered on me for a second, just like staring at me, being like, how was camping, Ian?
I love that. I love the idea that your coach asked your parents to go camping that weekend. It's like, hey, listen, like it would mean so much for the team if Ian could just not be here.
You know, honestly, this has been like a weird, like something I held against my parents for years and years and years and years. And it never occurred to me that the coach like visited our house and sat at the table and just like, listen, I got a real big favor to ask you. Winning the championship would just mean a lot to these kids. And I don't know if there's a nice way to put it, but if you put Ian in that game, he's going to fuck it up for us.
I love this idea so much. Well, you know what? I don't think I was any better when I was playing T-ball. I remember... I have this memory that I just never understood the rules, like they weren't explained to me right. So I know like you're supposed to get the ball and like you tag someone with your like your glove or whatever, like when you have the ball you touch them and then they're out, you know. But I didn't realize you had to have the ball. So every person who was surrounding between second and third base, I was just touching every single one of them. And I was like, why aren't you stopped? Like, I got him.
I love the idea that, like, you're just playing tag with extra steps.
That's basically what I thought it was. And I know my mom tells me this story every once in a while whenever it comes up. But apparently, like, they put, after that fiasco, I guess they put me in outfield. And then apparently my mom and my sister were really embarrassed because at one point I was just like staring straight up at the sky, like spinning in circles with my arms out, just like flailing for I guess like half a game or something like that. Like I just wouldn't stop. Like that's this what is, I did that day.
this is like kind of unrelated, but I remember I was on this soccer team called the Big Green. And our coach was this like really fucking intense guy from like Mexico. And I just remember he took it super seriously. And like, I was one of these fucking kids. And I think like I found a frog on the field or something. And like I like ran towards these kids to, it looked like, I don't know, like they'd like stolen the ball and they were just on a tear toward our goal. And I was like booking it as fast as I fucking could. And the coach was like, Yassian, go. And I like dove to like protect this frog that I saw. And like the kids just ran past me and scored. And like I like stood up and like ran the frog over to the sidelines and like dropped it. And he was like, he pulled me out of the game and he was like, what are you doing? You just let them score. And I started crying. And then like I just like went into a little, literally fell into a little ball and like pulled my jersey over my head. I was like this like little nugget inside of this soccer jersey.
Oh, little baby Ian.
No, but I did, and then I remember he called home later and he was like, he left like an effusive 10-minute apology message. He's like, I'm so sorry. I don't know what came over me. Like, you know, it's just a game. You're just a kid. Like, that poor frog. I was just like, I felt so validated.
Oh, that's a cute story. It's so, how old were you? How old was little baby Ian crying in his shirt?
Oh my God! This had to be first or second grade. I was when Ian was on the big green, he was a little baby.
I kind of love the imagine. I love the idea of just being like, "Oh man, I must have been 16, 17."
Oh man, I was probably my first year of college. You know.
I love that. So baseball, Ian. What do you know about cricket?
Nothing. All right. So, okay.
I had more following that question.
Like, all right. What do I know about cricket? Not much. Go ahead.
Is it? It's like the same thing, right? It's like an American version of cricket. It's like the dumb American cricket is baseball. Do you feel like that's fair?
The dumb American.
Well, I guess if you don't know anything about cricket. You don't know.
I don't know. You know what's so funny? It's like right when you said that, I was like, isn't cricket like T-ball? Like, does someone throw them the ball or do they hit it off a stick?
They throw it to a stick, too. And they have, like, bases, but it's, like, back and forth. And, like, the pitch is, like, all around them. It's, like, a 360-degree pitch. We should be doing cricket camp. That's another camp.
That'll be on the sports docket. All right. Camp Reeducation does sports coming to a theater near you. All right. So we did cover our like empirical experience of baseball. Like we do have some experience playing it to a degree, but then, you know, it kind of fell off the map for us. And I don't know about you, but at least for me, once I stopped playing it, I think baseball occupies this very interesting like cultural space. You know, they call baseball America's pastime. And I don't know, like, I feel like baseball almost feels imaginary to me. Like, it occupies such an interesting part of, like, the collective American imagination. Like, do you feel that way, too?
That's interesting. Well, I guess I don't understand what you mean by, like, imaginary. What do you mean by that?
Sometimes I feel like I'm just, like, in a simulation and, like, it's like I'm in a movie and baseball is just, like, an imaginary sport they play in this, like, sci-fi world. Like, whenever I go into a bar and baseball's on, I'm just like, they're still doing this, huh?
Yeah, honestly, I spend zero time thinking about it at all. Like, it is, like, it exists, I see it, and I literally do, I don't even understand that there's, like, baseball happening. Like, I get it's there, but I just glaze over as soon as I see it. Like, I literally, I don't know any of the rules. So, like, when baseball's on, I just, like, I don't even know what I'm watching, if I'm being totally honest.
I know like a couple of the rules. I know there's like a strike box and you got to throw it in the box, and then there's a foul ball, and then I guess like a foul ball is a strike until your last foul ball, and then you get four extra foul balls or something like that. I don't know, it's fucking crazy.
I'm saying I don't know any of the rules. I do know, so I know those things. And I know you gotta hit the ball and go around the bases, and you just gotta tag everyone and then they're out. Like, I get that whole thing. It's,
you know, when I was a kid, I thought switch hitter was like the batter gave the pitcher the bat and then threw to the batter.
No, and you didn't.
Yeah, I know. Yeah, busted.
That's too funny. It doesn't feel like imaginary. I just don't give a shit. I just also feel like it's like a dying beast. Like, we used to care about it as a country, but we care less about unifying around sports. But maybe that's not true, because there's still fucking football. I guess it just got replaced by a more eventful... Violent. Yeah. Sport. Like, I just think, like, football's more interesting.
My theory for this is that I think that really started happening when TV started getting better. Because the more you put baseball, the more high definition you added to baseball, like, the more you could just clearly see it was a game where nothing happened. And then, like, football, you were like, wow, these guys are really beating the shit out of each other. Like, on these, like, old TVs where it was just, like, you know, at the top of the stadium and they looked like little ants kind of colliding and falling, you were like, whatever. But once they got into, like, high D and you could see a guy, like, Goldberg spearing another guy from the neck down, and you're just like, holy shit, this is fucking amazing.
Yeah. So. Yeah, it definitely seems like, do you think that's what it is, though? You think it's just that it's just the television changed it? I mean, it's a boring show to watch in person. It's a boring like game. Like you're still just watching. Like most of the time, everyone's just standing in the dugouts, right?
Yeah, but think about like peak baseball and like the, you know, I don't know when peak baseball was, but I do know it was a time before cell phones, right? So it's like it was before this era of constant entertainment. So I imagine like in an age where you just had to ride the subway, you know, like not look at your phone or anything. Like a baseball game was probably pretty exciting by comparison, I guess. So,
are you saying like, watching baseball was better than being on the subway without a cell phone?
Yeah. I mean, think about how easy it is for us to remain entertained now. Like, we could, if we wanted to, we could be in a constant state of entertainment. Like, picture the person listening to this right now. Maybe they've got headphones on. Maybe they're washing their dishes. Maybe they're in their car driving somewhere.
They're probably like, masturbating. Yeah, go ahead.
Faster, daddy.
God.
Sorry, faster, mommy.
Oh, I don't like it at all.
Anyway. No, but like it's funny that like in this age of like constant entertainment, what is baseball's place? Like this very slow moving sport that it, you know, there can be entire games where like there's no score. I mean, it's kind of like soccer, but at least soccer they're constantly running back and forth. Right, that's right. Another story. And you and I talked about this a little off the record. There's like this, I feel like all they have now is the tagline, "We're America's pastime," even though America's new pastime is police violence and racism. So,
well, that's their pastime. I would say that's been around for a while too. They're just,
no, I want to change that. It's police violence and mass shootings. That's our new pastime.
Yeah, I just think it's just marketing. It's like they're hanging on to, whatever, I guess, like a patriotic obligation to like keep going, and I don't know, caring. Do you think, I really do think that's what it is. Like they're using that to guilt conservatives into liking the sport still.
Well, I know liberals that watch the sport as well, but I mean, you know, at this point, what's the difference between the two parties? No, but like, yeah, it's I agree with you 100%. I just feel like it's this thing that like they're like, hey, you can't get rid of us. We're America's pastime. Mm. And I think this is what I mean when I say like imaginary, because like when, you know, baseball being America's pastime, like I'm imagining an America where like men wore top hats and like women were flapping and, you know, just what they were called, flappers, right?
Yeah, yeah. I don't know if they were flapping though. I don't know if that's
just
the
always flapping, never stopped flapping. They loved to flap.
Yeah,
yeah. But I mean, even that America is like an imaginary version of the country. Like that was an America when, like, you know, like men could beat their wives with sticks and like kids worked in coal mines and the actual pastime was like dying in factory fires because like there weren't anything as safety codes yet and like this like awful you know, holistic, I'm carrying the word holistic like landscape, you know. And again, like when we idealize America's past, like we look over these really ugly, brutish parts of it, and it's weird because I feel like baseball is kind of doing that as well. It's like, I remember a time when a man could hit a ball with a stick, kids would stand in busy road and play stickball and hit Fords that you used to have to start by turning a hand crank. It was a simpler time, this America.
What time period exactly are you imagining?
Like, literally just like a mishmash. I'm kind of imagining like when conservatives say like, remember when things were better, and they just like imagine, I don't know, like everything from like 1888 up till 1950 or something.
Okay. Honestly, I have no idea when baseball started. Like, do you?
No.
I like, all right, let's guess on the record. What, you first?
I'm gonna go. You know, I've got two dates in mind, and I know this is kind of cheating, but I feel like one, I want to say like 1888, and then the other is like 1920.
Okay, I'm thinking late 1800s too. Yeah. I'm definitely thinking post Civil War. I'm thinking before the turn of the century. I'm gonna say, are we doing Price is Right rules?
You know what? I guess two. Why don't you guess two as well?
All right. Well, I'm going to say, I'll say 1870 or 1890.
Okay. So in between, sandwiched in between mine.
Yeah.
You know what? Even after I say 1920, I think this is part of why baseball became so popular, because I think radio really helped baseball become popular. And it wasn't necessarily the sport, but it was like, there were these really infectious radio personalities. I think I remember hearing or reading about something like this, and they would just be like, you know, because remember there was that famous comedy skit, Who's On First, by Abbott and Costello. And I think that's part of like this like baseball mystique, is this idea that like everyone around the country was tuning in to listen to baseball, but it wasn't necessarily about baseball so much as it was about like the personalities describing it to you.
Well, I'm curious, like, are they tuning in? I mean, they had to have wanted to hear about baseball before they made baseball radio programs. Like, I would imagine that they didn't just start saying like, hey, you guys don't give a fuck about this thing, we're going to start broadcasting it, so now you're going to like it. Like, I'm sure they already cared at least somewhat about the sport before they made the programs.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know to what extent, though, which kind of leads me into this next idea is I feel like my other, I don't know, information depository about baseball comes from like pop culture, like baseball movies. Is it, do you have like a favorite baseball movie? Like, did you ever, as a kid, I'm sure you watched Angels in the Outfield, right?
Oh, I forgot about that movie, 100%.
Yeah.
I'm upset about that movie. Like, remembering it, like, I feel like that's like fucking brainwashing.
Propaganda for kids.
Yeah, like, just like, God is real, children. There's angels in the outfield.
God is real, and he loves baseball and God. America.
Honestly, the only movie that I remember and, like, still have positive feelings about is Sandlot. Yeah. Yeah, you beat me to it.
Yeah. Well, no, I knew you were going to say Sandlot. Well, yeah. What millennial does not know, has not seen, and does not love the Sandlot?
I don't remember it at all. Like, I know there's a big dog, and like that's like the whole thing. Like, they
hit, and James Earl Jones is in that movie.
Who's that? I don't drink tea, so I'm not sure.
James. God, I hate you. I'm not falling for your trap and describing James Earl Jones. Okay,
I really don't know who it is, but that's fine.
Okay, you know what? All right. You know, no, fuck it. I'm gonna, dude, come on, Darth Vader, Mufasa. He's the voice actor for all of these people.
Neither of those people have human faces.
He's in Coming to America? Come on.
Isn't that Eddie Murphy?
He's not the star. He's in the movie. You're allowed to be in the movie and be referenced in it.
Yeah, you're not helping me. I'm sorry, I'm not up to date with my early 90s movies.
You know what? How am I the one that lived out of the country for like 10 years and I still know this shit? Moving on.
Yeah, it's because you're still living in your four-year-old life. There was so much trauma in your early life. You know, those 2 years before I was born were so traumatic for you that anything around that time you cling on to until Shay came into the world and brightened it and forgave these original sins.
True. No, talk about an outfield with some angels in it.
Yes.
Okay. But no, like, I, you know, honestly, like, before you said Sandlot, I forgot about the Sandlot, but like, I'm thinking about What Dreams May Come. I'm thinking about the Sandlot. I'm thinking about Angels in the Outfield. I'm thinking about Wild Things. Like, there are so many, like, that Jimmy Fallon movie that he's in the movie with Drew Barrymore, and he's like, I love the Red Sox.
I don't know any of these. Wait, is What Dreams Will Come the one where they say, if you build it, they will come. Okay. All right. I know about that. I'm not sure if I've seen that movie. I saw it when I was a child and like didn't understand it.
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't think, so do these movies, like do they still, to use a phrase that you say often, do they live large in your imagination?
They don't loom large, but it's for like, you know, large, I was thinking about what I know about baseball. And it's just like, honestly, like, I don't say like most of my knowledge comes from these movies, but there was this like really weird period where like baseball, I feel like, was used as like this really weird kind of like propagandistic tool to be like, this is what makes America great. Religion, diversity, little kids getting together in their backyard and hitting balls into a black man's house and his dog would eat them. Like,
right. Well, Ian, I'm looking at the time. We're quickly approaching the end of this bottle. What are your expectations for the next week?
My expectations for the next, I know that to immerse in this topic, we are going to be diving into fantasy baseball as our proxy. And honestly, I'm just reminded of that line in Futurama where they take Fry to like a baseball game in the year 3000, and it's they call it Blurnsball now. He's like, why do they call it Blurnsball? And they're like, oh, they finally jazzed it up. And he gets really indignant for a second, and he's like, baseball didn't need to be. Oh, they finally jazzed it up. That's that's what I'm anticipating this week being like.
That's so funny. What a great memory. Have you watched that recently? Like, how do you...
No.
That's because I have watched it recently, and I was like, yeah, what happens in that scene? Like, I probably saw that episode like 2 weeks ago, and I was like, oh, yeah, I kind of remember this. Regardless. Okay, yeah, I am imagining hating it, being very bored, having to spend a lot of time looking up very minor... insignificant details and insignificant in the greater scheme of like the world. Mm-hmm. And it being like a, I don't know. You know what? It's funny. Like, I'm not looking forward to challenging these biases and preconceptions, because like all of our like camps, typically, like whenever we're like challenging like toxic masculinity by like going in the other direction, like I fucking love it. But now we're like kind of diving into like a very masculine subject, and like, I'm not like stoked about doing something like conventionally masculine, you know, like liking sports, which I realize like women like sports as well, and women like baseball, but like it's definitely like seems I don't know, somehow sports just still feel very masculine.
You know what? It's so funny though. It's like, I feel like that's become like weaponized by women in the I'm not like other girls convention thing, right? It's like, I'm not like other girls. I like football. And it's like, damn, dude, that sucks.
It'd be cooler. Yeah. If no one liked football, I guess. Like, is that what, like,
yeah,
that's how,
like,
I feel.
Yeah. Bummer, dude. Like, damn, I can't believe they got you. Sorry.
Yeah. Exactly. Yeah. Oh, well, we lost another one to the patriarchy. Bummer.
Yeah, I know.
Okay, cool. Well, I guess with that, we'll have to go find out what the fuck fantasy baseball is, and through that, I guess we'll learn what baseball is as well.
All right, cool. Shay, it's been delightful spending time in this bottle with you. Let's pass it back to future Shay and future Ian.
All right. Do-do-do-do. Just every time now.
All right. Ignorance in a bottle, over.
Ignorance in a bottle.
Thank you once again to Pass Ian and Pass Shay. I wouldn't be me without you. You're what makes me special. And if you could see where you'd end up now, I know that you'd be proud. So, you know, it's always nice to feel connected to you. So, I mean, immediately coming out of that, I apparently learned this past week. I don't know. Baseball's got a long history. Like, if you include hitting rocks with sticks, it's been around forever. But I guess like it really started to take shape in the 1840s and 1850s, which I'm not going to lie, surprised me a little bit, because I'm like, fuck, that is old as shit.
Nice. Well, yeah. Do you think it's, I mean, that's not that surprising to me. I felt like, I mean, okay, so we did think it was in the 80s, like late 1800s, but like we were off by 50 years. I was like, all right, well, that's not that
bad. You know what? In the grand scheme of things, you're probably right. 50 years is probably nothing.
Yeah. I mean, I'm thinking like the history of like chess or whatever. I was like, that shit's fucking ancient. You know what I mean? And like, I'm sure soccer, it probably has like a history that's like two or three times the length. I have no fucking idea. But my guess is like at least 600 years of soccer in some form.
Soccer probably started like on ancient battlefields when they were literally kicking around the heads of their enemies. And they were like, hey, I bet you can't kick the head of your enemy through those two trees. And he was like, oh, yeah, watch me.
You're on, Augustus. Take that.
Take that. So, well, listen, we've got a lot of show to cover still. We heard what we had to say. We still have more to hear of what we had to say, but a more informed version of what we had to say. This show is complicated. I'm just now realizing what a complicated show this is. Anyway, without further ado, let's dive into my first captain's log, because I was obsessed with this idea of America's pastime. Like, what the fuck this means, why we cling to this so severely and so intently. And there was an interesting question that came up, and I know you think you've got an answer for it, but let's hear what I have to say, let's hear what you have to say, and then we'll hash it out.
What's up, brother? It's, who else would it be? We're on video now, all right? There's no confusing it. It's me. It is your boy, okay? The lustrous, the lovely, the lascivious, I'm out of adjectives that start with L, and I'm going to move past this. All right, so listen, we've spent the past week like watching baseball clips, thinking about baseball, you know, watching documentaries about baseball. And I came across this line by this writer, Gerald Early, in one of the Ken Burns documentaries on baseball. As I wanted to just kind of focus on beginnings and endings. And he says this interesting comment about baseball. He says that, you know, first of all, it's a beautifully designed game. It's beautiful to watch. But then he says something that gave me a lot of pause, because it sounds really meaningful, but upon reflection, I don't think it means anything. He said, principally, baseball makes me feel American. It makes me feel connected to the culture. And I just thought that was such a fascinating statement to make, because it made me think, and I'm curious to hear what you say about this, like what makes you feel American? What makes you feel connected to American culture? At first glance, or like on like first reflection, nothing makes me feel connected to American culture, and I'm not entirely sure what makes me feel American. He also says that he thinks American will be known for three things 2,000 years from now. Come on, we're not going to be around 2,000 years from now. When they study the civilization, and he says it's the Constitution, jazz music, and baseball. And I mean, there's a lot in there. There's a lot to unpack, but I'm so curious to see what you have to say about this. I'm sure it's going to be fascinating. So I'm going to go ahead and stop here, kick it back over to us, and we're going to chat about it. So Shay, your beautiful, lovely, sexy thoughts. So before you give me your beautiful, sexy, lovely thoughts, I just want to say lustrous. It's just lustrous. And I don't know why, but basically I said I was shiny and horny. So
that sounds like you. That feels spot on. Like you've nailed it. You've nailed your prime characteristics in one tidy little adjective.
There were two tidy little adjectives, okay? Shiny and horny. Oh, that is me. Gotcha. That is who I am.
Well, Ian, to answer your question, what was your question? I know you had all this time in a captain's log to ask it, and I listened, I swear, but if you could just summarize it for me.
So my question was basically, I mean, I think that's such an interesting, well, he didn't pose it as a question. It was just basically a statement that he made, but I was like, does this mean anything? It's just like one of those things that sounds meaningful until you stop and think about it, and you're like, this doesn't mean anything. What makes you feel American? And like, what makes you feel connected to American culture? Like, I think that's such a fascinating idea.
Well, you know what's interesting about this is like, I know when like the first couple times I went abroad, and like sometimes I went abroad with like other people, or like I feel like, and this isn't a dig at you at all, but like sometimes when I've heard other people like just start to like branch out of like American culture or whatever, like being American or like leaving America is really what I mean. Like they're like, oh, America has no culture. Like the people say that all the time. That's like, what is American culture? And to me, that feels like the most ethnocentric approach to like to at all. Like it's like we are normal. Like we are like the baseline over and or under which we judge every other civilization or every other culture or society, because we're just normal in that approach, right? And then like, you know, we'll say the French are like they're like a sophisticated version of us, is like inherently what we're talking about. And so you're effectively normalizing what it is to be like American, which is like fine, it's totally fine. I mean, but what that is it's basically just you're giving away the idea that you are the baseline, which is not the case at all. Like that and in that lies ethnocentrism. So I think like when people say like, well, what is it American? It's like, well, yeah, baseball is American. Like it was made in America, popularized in America, and like that popularity went outside of America, and that is American. But like, so I guess I don't like have any kind of issue with that, or I don't know. I guess like the main thing I wanted to like focus on was just that idea that like being American is a thing.
Well, I didn't say that it wasn't. I said, I don't know what makes me feel connected to American culture. Like, and, you know, it's funny. I was talking to Julian about this, and Julian's from Korea, and comparatively, Korea is thousands of years old as opposed to America, which is only a couple hundred years old. And I think, you know, Canada, Australia, and the United States, they're
really like three of the main, they're an interesting experiment in terms of nations because they were the three countries that really developed contemporaneously with capitalism. So it's like you have cultures whose you know, mindset is basically to create and manufacture, produce and sell. So it's like, I think that part of the American like Weltanschauung is essentially like that. It's like, I don't know, it's part of our, it's like in our fucking blood, this idea of like, no, industry, optimization, streamlining, like entrepreneurship. Like, I think that's very much part of the American culture, but like, that's because now we live in like this transnational corporate world. Maybe that's why it doesn't feel like it has a culture, because this is now just a ubiquitous frame of mind. And the director of Parasite, Bong Joon-ho, I should know this. You know, when he talked about the success of his movie Parasite, he was like, well, we all live in the same country now called capitalism. And the reason I kind of felt weird about this is because I was just like, well, you know, why baseball? Like, why not? Because we invented it. Like, why not movies? Why not the telephone? Why not airplanes? Why not cars? Like, these are all things that were created in America, but it's like, oh, baseball makes you feel American. It's like, well, that's just, if that's an American invention, why don't all American inventions make you feel connected to America? Like I'm driving around in my car, like, fuck, I feel American right now.
Well, I guess, like, cars, and I know, like, I you know, it's funny, because as soon as you said this, I was like, I know that there's, like, this contention, like, different countries claim that they invented like airplanes. Like, I know if you ask like a French person who invented the airplanes, they don't say the Wright brothers. They have their own Wright brothers who invented like the first French airplane, whatever.
The Wright brothers.
Those aren't pastimes. You know, those aren't things you do. Those are things you own, or, you know, or like occupy or whatever. So I guess like in the same sense, like maybe jazz feels really American because jazz is something that you like experience. You know, or like other forms of American music, like those are things that you like, they make you feel American because that's like an experience that you undertake. And I, you know, like even like movies, I feel like, yeah, like I think movies are kind of American. Like, I think, you know, we do take pride in like our Hollywood. I mean, like, you know, Hollywood.
I think we used to.
Yeah, that's true. I mean, like the golden age of cinema, like absolutely.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. Yeah, 100%. Hitchcock. Oh God, the all over like our Westerns and shit like that. Ooh, I mean, those are problematic.
But you know what, like even just to, like to touch on, so like things that make me feel American, like and it's weird because it's the kind of question we ask all the time, what is water, you know, like, and I think like when I don't feel like anything's American until I like don't have those things anymore. Like, you know, as someone like, I like eating vegetarian like a lot of times, and like I go abroad, like I was in Argentina and it's just like, yeah, I just want to go somewhere in a metropolitan city and like be able to eat not meat, you know, and like, fuck, like that is insane. So like having a vegetarian diet makes me feel fucking American, you know what I mean?
I love that you went to like the steak capital of the world and you're like, where's a guy gotta go to get a cucumber around here?
It's insane how little they consider the fact that you don't have to eat fucking steak for every meal. Truly, yeah. Truly.
No, but you know, honestly, like I appreciate that answer. But yeah, it's weird because like, you know, it's so funny, like when I was in Lebanon, and like when I was coming to the end of my tenure there, all I could think about, I was like, God, I can't wait to get back to America and sit in a fucking diner and have a waitress call me sweet thing, or like honey pie, or like sugar cube dick. And
That was after you paid and went home with her, right?
Because it's the size of a sugar cube, which is how I got the nickname. But like a big sugar cube. No, yeah,
of course.
Yeah, sure. Anyway. But that's like all I wanted. I was like, God, I just can't wait to like go to America, sit in a diner, get free refills on coffee, order an apple pie with a scoop of ice cream on top, and just like kind of sit and watch the world go by. And I know that's like not unique necessarily to America. Like, I'm sure other countries have their equivalent. But yeah, I just was like, why, you know, it's funny because I feel like for people that haven't really thought about the answer, baseball is just kind of their go-to. They're like, yeah, baseball. Like, there's nothing more American than baseball and apple pie. And it's just like, you know, out of everything that you could choose, it's funny that baseball kind of reserves this place in the collective imagination as like the most American thing possible. And to me, it's just, I don't know, it kind of stops me in my tracks a little bit. But
I like your point of view and the way that you try to drag me for being a fucking racist, for being a colonizer.
Well, again, I wasn't saying those are your opinions. I was just saying those are opinions that some people have. Yeah, but I mean, at least that's what I think. I don't know.
Well, you know what? I think that we covered that beautifully. I think that's one for the record books. And I know that you've got your own ideas about, you know, I was, as is my custom, like, I was just obsessed with this, you know, baseball is a cultural phenomenon and its place in history. And then per you and your beautiful little math brain, always adding stuff up and you know, multiplying numbers and subtracting numbers and making little columns and spreadsheets. You were thinking a lot about fantasy baseball as like our primary entry point into this world. So let's hear what you had to say about the gamification of games.
So I feel like there's no surprise that I have never really liked watching sports. And I think a big reason for that is because I've always rationalized to myself, like, why would I watch a sport when I could play it myself? It's like watching other kids going out and playing and just like sitting at my living room window and watching them and being content with that. I've always like found that like as a really unsatisfying perspective for like an activity. Like, why would I watch you do it when I can? And so like when I think of like the fantasy baseball aspect, what I kind of see is like you've managed to take watching baseball so much. You've watched it so much that you know everything that's happened for like the last couple of seasons, weeks, months, years, whatever. Like, you know everyone involved. And then now you take this insane body of knowledge and you've gamified the knowledge of having watched all of these people. So you've taken something which was like an inherently passive, instead of playing yourself, you passively watched and then created a different game out of this. You've gamified your passivity. And like, I think, like, I like that it's gamified now. Like, now that in itself, like, does appeal more to me. But you still have to get through this very long period of consumption. Like, there has to be this threshold that's passed of watching an insane amount of baseball, or at least familiarizing yourself so much with other people playing the sport, that it still seems unattractive to me, because I still would have to put in all of those hours just watching in order to play this other game. Whereas, like, if anything, honestly, I think I'd still just rather go outside and play baseball myself. Or, like, you know, with a group of 9 people or whatever.
So, Shay, I've got a question for you.
All righty, and I'll bite. What's up?
So, like, when you go to a concert and you're watching like a concert pianist play the piano, are you like, I'm bored, I can do that at home?
Well, maybe, honestly. It depends how good, what kind of music it is.
When you're sitting in a movie theater watching like Leonardo DiCaprio on screen, you're like, I'm out of here, I'm gonna go home and make my own movie.
Well, this is like kind of like what I was talking about at the top of the episode. Like, I definitely think that it's more interesting to watch like to watch music, or to, I guess, really to listen to music, or other forms of like pure entertainment. Because I don't feel like watching people play a sport is entertaining to me.
You know, it's funny that you say that, because I actually, one of the questions I wrote down this week in my little journal, my little thinky book, was like, this idea, you know, we talked a lot about like pastime, and my question, I think, was like, try to think about how to best phrase it as well. Something along the lines of, okay, so like, this is something people watch because it entertains them and it passes the time. And then it's just this question of like, well, all right, well, how should we spend our free time? And if it's not quote unquote like productive, does it matter? And it's so funny how quick I am to like criticize that this is the way that people want to spend their time, you know? Do you feel that way too?
That's interesting. I don't know, because I feel very much like I need to be on, like, doing something all the time. Like, I struggle with downtime, like, in the same way that you're talking about, like, that poet, the Russian poet at the top of the episode. Like,
yeah.
I really struggle with dealing with boredom, you know, and like, I'm constantly trying to find something that I would consider productive to fill that space. And, you know, even, it's weird, because, like, now that I'm in a partnership, I even consider I like very much think of partnership as like a something to work on. You know, this is like if we're having issues, or like, you know, if I'm like, if something, if we need to like talk through something, that's like productive to me, because I think of that as like, this is building a relationship, and I'm thinking of it in terms of building it, you know. And so I don't know, I really struggle with this, but I know other people don't struggle with it at all. And I'm hesitant to criticize those kind of people, you know, people who are content, because I actually feel like they might have an answer that I don't have. Like, if you're content, like just letting life pass by, and you don't have this crushing sense of like, I don't know if it's insufficiency or
incompletion,
something exists in you that I kind of wish exists in me, because I would like, probably honestly, to be able to be content doing something super, what I would consider mindless, you know. Like, I wonder if life would be better if I had a little bit, you know, slightly more contentment in my everyday life. So I don't know. So that being said, like, I still don't like sports, but like, and I think there could be better ways to even be passive and or like content with doing nothing. But I don't know. Like, that's why I liked meditation camp. I don't know.
Well, you know what's so funny is, like, you kind of touched on this in the beginning of the episode. I never thought of it like this before, but it was really funny. You said, like, why would I want to watch like a gamified metaphor for life? Like, yeah, it's really long and boring and nothing happens. But it's interesting because, like, I think that we get the same thing out of, like, literature and music and cinema that, you know, some of these people get from sports. And it's just funny because maybe it feels less, maybe it feels less effeminate to them. And they're like, oh, yeah, you know, but it's a sport. But there is, like, this pretty hefty romanticization of it. Like, this, you know, in game form, this metaphor for, like, waiting around, like, working hard with nothing happening, no payoffs, and then, like, this life-changing instant, you know, like, this moment where the bat hits the fucking baseball, and it's just, like, I don't know, like, this thrill of possibility. And in one of the documentaries I watched about baseball, you know, Mario Cuomo, the Cuomo crime family has had their grip on New York for as long as I can remember. He said one of the thrilling things about baseball, and that maybe this is one of the things that we hate, is that there's no clock in baseball. Like, you're never up against time isn't the thing against you. Like, it's all up to you. Like, even if you're down 10-0 in your final inning, you could still come back and win, provided that you play smart enough. So it's, I don't know. Like, maybe there is just like this narrative element, one. And then two, you know, it's funny. Aristotle liked drama because he said that society needs catharsis, and that drama was how they could get it. Tragedy was how they could get it. And in place. And I wonder if that we've just kind of substituted, you know, tragedy for following a sports team, you know, and like losing is, you know, kind of the modern way to confront mortality and loss. And then winning is that moment of joy, the catharsis that Aristotle talked about, that, like, you know, kind of helps make you feel alive and reminds you what life feels like.
You know, you touched on something right at the beginning of this that really makes me think, really makes me recontextualize, I think, like, my relationship with sports. And maybe this is inherently condescending, so I just want to put that caveat there and see if you
to me give that. Me a second to brace myself.
No, I think you'll be fine with this one, but like, I think I wonder if, like, the reason we like cinema, literature, music, the arts more than I think we relate to sports is because I think sports and, like, the arts might both be talking about the human condition, but through different depths and complexities. Like, whereas, like, let's say, take literature, for instance, which I think could be the most complex, at least, like, in a literal sense. Like, you can talk about the most complicated family relationships that, like, have the heights of ecstasy and, like, the depths of tragedy, like, right next to each other. Whereas, like, and with so much nuance and complexity that, like, maybe that's too much, or, like, just maybe that's off-putting, you know, for fans that like really prefer sports to that. And so they want like a simpler analog to that. And that's for them. That is like someone hitting a fucking baseball. It's shooting super fucking far into the field. They're like, wow, I did it. I hit the ball far, only to have someone catch it and get them out. And you have that same dichotomy of like ecstasy and despair right next to each other in a form that might be more digestible for some viewers.
You know, it's funny that you mentioned that too, because I feel like in a lot of these games even, and you know, I'm more familiar with football because I think that we're predominantly like a football culture now, way more so than baseball.
Right.
But like, I'm going to use Tom Brady as an example. Like Tom Brady is like the villain of football, right? He's like arguably maybe one of the greatest football players to have ever lived. He was, you know, he loves Trump. He left, you know, Boston or the New England Pats, maybe he was kicked out to like go be on the Tampa Bay Buccaneers and like almost through spite wins the Super Bowl. And just like, you know, it's just like, fuck, like, you know, he's handsome. He cheated on his fucking wife with his supermodel. Like he's a son of a bitch. But think about like, you know, how good it feels to watch him get fucking sacked. Just like watch somebody absolutely lay this guy out on the field. But like with all these games too, like they always dramatize it ahead of time. They're like, this is so-and-so's last season. Like I remember when Jerome Bettis, who was a running back for the Pittsburgh Steelers, like won the Super Bowl and then retired. Like, I mean, they're just like literally playing all these things like through his career. And like, even if you were against the Steelers, like you could still walk away from that game and feel like good for Jerome Bettis to have worked so hard in football his whole life. And like, get a Super Bowl, and you're like, wow, like that's just so great. That's really meaningful. And like on the one hand, you know, it's absurd. It's like foundationally built on nothing. It's just like this guy construct of meaning. Like, wow, this guy was really good at running with a ball in his hands. But you know that it means a lot to him as an individual. So it's like you do. I do know that people put like so much stock in his sports. And again, like it goes back to this idea of catharsis, where it's just like, you know, maybe through what's the word I'm looking for? Proxies.
Sure.
Yeah, I'll use that. You're kind of living vicariously through these players, and like their victory becomes your victory. And it's like, you know, I'll never have a moment like this in my life, but fuck, this, it sure feels good to get this close, you know?
I think you're right about the living vicariously through these other people. Like, I actually had never considered, like, people are like, yes, like my life, my football touchdown. I don't know. God, I cannot talk about sports at all. Also, just a quick aside, like, you're like, yeah, Tom Brady's the enemy of the NFL or whatever. I'm like, I literally, like, I don't know who that is. Like, I've heard that name before. No idea who he looks like. Don't know what the Tampa Bay Buccaneers are. Like, I'm a very ignorant sportser. But
I'm sport.
But
just
like,
me, man. I'm sportsing.
I honestly don't know anything about it. And you know, it's funny, like, you know, I was going to talk about something else, but now I'm way more interested in this new topic, new idea.
Yeah, let's yeah, keep going.
Like, even like SNL or Lonely Island had this parody that my girlfriend Stephanie showed me this week, and it was like, I like sports and I don't care who knows. And it's just like these bros, like the joke is like bros, like not caring about like liking sports. It's like, no one's going to, I mean, I guess we're judging people who like sports, but like also it just seems like the people who are in touch with sports or like who are really into sports, like don't seem to like have as emotional of a grasp on like things generally is like my impression. And I know that's a stereotype and I'm sure it's wrong, but that's like where I'm starting from with a lot of this. And a lot of this like also like kind of touches back on like why I don't think I like sports. And I know you and I both had captain's logs that touched on this, but seeing as I'm the one in control here at the editing station, I'll go ahead and only play mine. So let's go ahead and do that now.
What's up, Ian? Shay here, and it's day 4. And we just did our fantasy draft last night, and I was reflecting on it, and maybe to my chagrin, I thought it was a really fucking good time. I really, like, it was weird, because I didn't expect it. I mean, I guess I kind of expected it to be fun, but it was a blast, man. Like, I liked hanging out with you guys. Like, we had the whole Zoom meeting together. We had, like, everyone picking their teams, and, like, granted, no one knew what the hell we were doing, but it was still, like, a lot of fun. All of us figuring it out together and like being like a little competitive, but also like hardly mattering because there was nothing, like no real consequences to it one way or the other. So it was like really fun. So I was coming around thinking like, okay, well, this seems like pretty, you know, I mean, at worst, it's like a chaotic neutral or something, you know, or whatever. It doesn't seem like there's really any major drawbacks to it. So then why have I for so long, like kind of hated
baseball as like an extension of like the general sports world. And then I guess like what it comes down to is like I probably just like really early on rejected sports as something that like the jockey cool kids did, and like I didn't associate with being a jockey cool kid, so I didn't want to like play their games or like the things they liked. Like I remember being like 12, I guess, and deciding like, no, I'm gonna like punk music, and I'm gonna be like one of the, like I'm gonna be like the rocker kid or whatever. Like I remember like having that like decision made, and I guess like along with that decision came like rejecting a lot of like this like more mainstream bro-y sports culture. And so I think like I chose to dislike it first and then found reasons to dislike it later. And now I'm going back and wondering like, okay, well, does that make sense? Like, I know I've met cool people who like sports. And so I guess like now the question is like, has my dislike of sports been justified for all these years?
No, has it?
You know, I was really thinking, I was like, how is Ian gonna take us out of here? So much to unpack here, and he just threw it back to me. I wish I had a good sports metaphor for, like, what that would be, like a handoff or something? I really don't know.
Nice. You know what this got me thinking about, honestly, was, like, how... This is so funny, man. Like, I feel like we're just having, like, an emotional powwow. Like, we're such... Oh, man, I was about to be toxic as fuck. I was about to be like, we're such chicks, but I know...
Oh, wow.
I don't know. Do you feel like a conventional man? Let me go ahead and just lay that out there. Like, that's an interesting, tough question that I think a lot of men in society is asking these days. Do you feel like a conventional man? Do you think such a thing is a thing at all?
You know what's interesting is I think a couple of years ago, I would say no, but... I do, but I think it's because I think of like the typical like patriarchy dudes that we see and hate are like I think of them as just like kind of sick now, you know, like they've like been culturally infected with like some version of, I don't know, horrible like misogyny and but like also like emotional deprecation that's like led to like a life of like unfulfillment, and I think that kind of sucks. But I think like, I don't know, I'm not saying that like I'm immune from the patriarchy, obviously I'm not, but like on the other hand, I feel like at least like acknowledging it and like trying to like fight some of the forces that like put me where I am now and like that have just like constantly been like telling me these weird fucking lies my entire life, like at least being aware of them has like been different. And so I think more so than what historically would have been considered like a real man, because I think what a real man was like a sick, like sad version, like a shell of a real man.
You know what's so funny is I kind of feel like we're in my territory now where it's like I take us on these long tangents and you're like, what does this have to do with baseball? And I'm like, no, I want to talk about this. This reminds me of when I worked the last job I had in Korea before I moved back to America, where I was working at the prosthetic penile implant center. And my boss's mindset was like, the thing that makes men men is their ability to get an erection. And he was like, I mean, to him, that was it. He's like, what is a man without the ability to get an erection? And I know how I feel about this, but I kind of want to just ask you this on the spot. What are your thoughts on that?
I feel like those are unrelated, but maybe similar. No, I don't think they're related. Like, what? I mean, is your manliness defined or like predicated on sex? Like, I don't think so. Like, is masculinity itself predicated on? Because I guess that's really the question.
To get a boner?
Yeah, because I don't really think that's like... I mean, obviously, like, sexuality is a part of, like, masculinity on some level. But maybe... I don't know. I don't know. Is it? It's a complicated question.
It's a weird... I don't know. It was a weird thing. And it was funny because it was a question that, like, I was literally asked to think about every single day. Like, I was the marketing director / international patient liaison. And he would constantly ask me, like, all the time, you know, Ian, like, I need you to really be thinking about what it is that we're doing here for men. Like, what is it that makes a man a man? And it's funny because in some senses, it feels very in some ways it feels very regressive, but he was also, you know, progressive in the sense that, like, yeah, this surgery is important also for transgender men who, you know, are transitioned from female to male and then want to have a phallus. He's like, it's a big part of becoming a man for them, and it's a big part of being a man for men, is this ability to have, you know, and it's funny when I say have an erection, but the goal of the erection is essentially to, like, to make love.
To stick the erection into something.
Yeah, I mean, regardless of whether you're gay or straight or trans, like, I guess, you know, it's weird, this idea that masculinity, manhood, could essentially be boiled down to the ability to pop wood. And I don't know why what you said made me think of that, but I guess just in the context of, like, it was something I was forced to think about all the time. And even being asked to come up with an answer for 2.5 years, I still feel like I don't have one. It feels like a pointless question. Like, it's still, like, it's just an attempt to maintain, like, a gendered dichotomy between, like, this desire and this need to have a masculine and a feminine, and this idea of sports being, like, a masculine form of entertainment versus maybe, I don't know, a quote-unquote traditional form of entertainment, which is what? The arts?
I guess, yeah. I'm still just trying to think, like, about, like, sexuality and masculine, or, like, sexuality's role in masculinity.
Yeah,
and that's really,
it's
weird,
because, like, question.
Yeah, like, if I didn't have a dick at all, like, I guess I probably wouldn't, or, like, if I better yet, if I did not have any sex drive at all, like, what would being a man mean to me? Like, if I hadn't absolutely no, if I was asexual, you know, like, and I guess we could ask some asexual men how they feel about this. And but I guess that's, I mean, the fact that there exists asexual people who I identify as men has to imply that masculinity exists outside entirely, or can exist entirely outside of the world of sexuality.
Yeah, because I think sans sex organs and drive, masculinity is, I think it's attitudinal. Like, masculinity is an attitude. It's a mode of thought. It's a framework for thinking and approaching the world. And I just wonder if, like, I don't know, maybe baseball falls under that purview. It's so funny because I also just wanted to talk about, like, activities that men do together. Like, I know how, you know, I know how women spend their time. God, it's so weird. I did not anticipate us being here. But, like, you know, when dudes ask if I want to get together and, like, play sports, I'm like, I don't want to fucking do that. That sounds like a nightmare. That sounds like super obnoxious. Like, I want to get a picnic blanket and go to a park and read a book and eat some grapes.
You know what's funny, though? Like, if you asked me to go play sports or something, like, I'd be down. You know, if you're like, hey, let's go get, like, a few of our very like-minded friends to go play kickball or something, or even fucking touch football or something, I'd be like, yeah, that sounds great. Like, I, you know, honestly, I need some, like, physical exercise. Like, I would be so super, like, me and Stephanie the other day bought a Frisbee and went and played Frisbee at the park. Like, I mean, I know that's not it's basically, yeah, it's not a sports catch, you know, it's super different. But if there was, like, more people and we wanted to play, like, ultimate Frisbee, like, I was super would have been down. Like, I love competing, which is, like, interesting, I guess, too. That's, like, a pride ego thing. But, like, I do. I really like competing. Like, it's a lot more fun. Like, even on our fucking fantasy bracket we did the other day, like, that was fun. Like, I didn't know if I was winning or losing, but I liked the idea, like, that I was doing something with the ends of proving to everyone how much better I am than them.
It's funny, that, though, too, because I think, I don't know, and I'm just not realizing this as well, that, like, is the way Americans present competition somehow unique in the world? Like, where even our pastimes are competitive to the, like, the pastime version of enjoying something is also competitive. Like, we figured out a way to make watching something competitive. It's like, you're not just watching sports anymore. Now you're also in competition to watch sports better than your friends.
Well, wasn't, like, Korea, like, incredibly competitive in, like, every aspect of, like, the personal and, like, professional life?
I mean, now. I in the past, I don't know what it was like.
Maybe that's just capitalism, then. That's, like, not, like, a necessarily American or any national claim, you know, that's like
I know every country has competition, but again, like, if we think about just the way that sports proliferated in the United States, like, the rabidity of fandom, and you know, I don't know. Like this is an idea that I feel like I could come up with a satisfactory answer for if
in
I took some time to think about it. But like on the fly, I'm like, it's just something I just kind of realized. I'm like, I don't know. Like maybe the way that Americans view competition is I wonder how it holds up compared to other countries.
I don't know.
Test scores are really fucking important in like Asia and like Japan and Korea and China and even like, you know, Germany. Maybe I take that. I'm walking that last one back. But yeah, like even the point where like even like everything here is like it feels hyper competitive. Like even the most minute of pleasures has like a competitive edge to them.
I think of like the fucking World Football Cup. What's it, the World Cup?
FIFA
for soccer. You know, like that seems hyper, like incredibly hyper competitive. And in fact, the U.S. is not a very competitive team, you know, competitive in the other sense of the word, in FIFA, you know what I mean? So I think of like Brazil and like, you know, all of the fucking Western European teams that are like constantly like dominating this and like working very, very aggressively. And like the fervency, if that's the adjectival form of that word.
Yeah.
Fuck, fervency. No, that would be the noun form. And what do you the nominal form? Anyway,
nominal.
There we go. We got there.
No, that's the name form.
But that's the same thing, right? Noun and name.
I guess, right? You're right. Wait, hold on. Yeah, you know what? I there's another term, but
sustantival.
This is devolving into grammar camp.
Sustantival form. maybe I'm bringing that from something else.
No,
anyway, everyone.
Nominal, yeah.
You know, you know where I was going with that last point, so we'll just assume that I got there without a huge detour. So, Ian, I think that's basically it for me and my captain's logs, and seeing as I cut yours short, I guess that's it for the captain's logs in general. Is there anything else you want to say before we hand it off to our sponsor and wrap this baby up with our final thoughts?
You know what? Honestly, I don't know how I feel about that last segment generally. There's so much more I want to say and say better, but... you know what, man? They can't all be winners. I'm going to chalk this one up to a loss.
If only we had another week to talk more about this.
You know what? There's more time to talk about it. Let's leave it here. I think, you know what? Let's go ahead and save it for next week. Let's hear from our sponsor and let's close her out.
Hello, everyone. Today's episode brought to you maybe by you. That's right. You, the listener, can help support Camp Reeducation with a simple monthly donation on a website called What's That? Patreon.com. Never heard of it. That's because you're a bad fan of the show. If you want to be a good fan of the show, you'll go straight to patreon.com/Camp Reeducation and give us as much money as you possibly can afford this month and every month for the foreseeable future. Too rich for your blood? Then go ahead and go to our Instagram.com account. There, you can follow us, like us, and then talk to us via our direct messaging feature on the platform. Instagram? What's that? You must be a Twitter person. Well, then go ahead and follow us on Twitter. What's that? Don't have a Twitter? Go ahead and make a Twitter.com account and follow us on there for all of the latest hot goss from the Camp Reeducation guys and gals. All right, well, that's all we have for you today. Love you so much and enjoy the last 40 seconds of the show. Wow, what a probably sports-related ad that was. So we are here. It's the end of the camp, as you heard before the ad. I don't think we have too much more to say, but Ian, I just want to know if there's any final words before we come back for next week.
Yeah, but I'm done. I'm done. I'm finished. So how about you?
I think I'm in the same boat, man. There's a lot more I think I want to explore, and thank God we have this extra week to do it. We've got some great experts lined up for next week, so I could not be more excited. So definitely stay tuned and hear what we learn from these amazing fantasy baseball experts. Everyone we got, I think, is an expert in fantasy baseball. Some actually like pretty well known people as well. So hopefully we don't just get our butts handed to us for our incredible ignorance and everything that comes along with that. Without any further ado, I guess, some beautiful music under here. Oh, it sounds like this might be the incredible song You Make Life Easy by the infallible James Bo Barclay. So I guess just go ahead and keep doing your thing, James.
There must be something wrong with me, 'cause though you're mine, it seems my mind will always be
worrying about the others, wondering about you. I always think it could be better. I wanna be more like you. But sometimes I'm fine in my head still. And for a moment there is calm, but then again I feel like a cat on a dog's lead, pretending I belong. Will I ever feel anything but wrong?
Listening to this week's episode. To hear the Captain's Logs in their entirety, become a monthly supporter and join our Patreon, where you'll also get tons of other fun goodies.
Here at Camp, we love talking over great music. If you want to hear more amazing music like the song you're hearing now, then follow our playlist on Spotify.
Stay tuned next week for the exciting conclusion of Wet Dream Fantasy Baseball Camp.
Whoa. Next week on Camp Re-Education? So yeah, dude, I'm telling you, she fit the whole bat in her ass.
I don't think that's what going to third base means.
I think you're going to want to watch this video.
Two girls, one World Cup, one World Series. Fuck. All right. Let's get out of here.